flash mobitis. Seriously, okay, Michelle does too. I can't, I know they're everywhere and on YouTube constantly. I just can't get enough of them. It just cracks me up. I could watch them all day, just string them together and keep watching them. I was walking into the mall the other morning to get my hair cut, and by the way, that's the only time I ever walk into a mall. I hate malls. But I was walking in to get my hair cut, and I walk through the door, and there's a couple different clusters of people sitting around. And then there's a group of people up on the railing above, and I'm not kidding, for like a just for a moment, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm walking into a flash mob. I'm like, oh, yeah, I cracked myself up. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Seriously. But I think that I love flash mobs, and I think that everybody loves flash mobs. Maybe you're sick of them. If you are, don't tell me. But I think most people love flash mobs because of that feeling of exhilaration you get when something so, like, extraordinary breaks into something so ordinary, right? To me, it's like, what's her name? You know, that British lady, Boyle? Boyle? Susan Boyle, yeah. You know, like, this amazingness comes out of this ordinary lady, you know, from Great Britain. Or, you know, you're in a mall. Like, who? You're walking in a mall, or apparently now at the Carlson Business School or wherever that was filmed. I mean, all these ordinary places, and you have this amazingness that comes busting in through it. And I think that if I could put one word on Advent, on this Advent season of waiting and watching and hoping, I think I have to use the word flash mob. And it's because of that. It's that feeling of hope that comes when you actually see something break into this world in such a crazy and exciting way. And so for me, that's the real upside of Advent. The downside, of course, is the non-flash mobby parts of life. And I feel like we live in this constant tension between the two. This week, I found out that one of my really good friends is deemed cancer-free. And at the same time, found out that a friend of a friend just was diagnosed with inoperable cancer. And so there's always these two things going on, you know, one threatening to mask and cover up the other. And I was thinking about this awesome trip that my family just took. My parents have been wanting to do it for years, and they took me and the kids and my sister and her kids to Disney World in Florida. And so I'm like riding off of this high of that great trip. And then last night, I'm watching a segment on 60 Minutes. And I don't know if any of you saw it. I just saw it on Facebook, so who knows when it appeared, but pretty recently. And it was highlighting poverty in this country, especially amongst kids. And it was talking about the poverty rate being like 25%. And then it focused in on the area of Florida right around Orlando. And it talked about the very highway that leads into Disney World having 70-some motels around it that now provide shelter for 500 kids. And I sat there last night, I couldn't stop crying because I'm like, we just went there and spent who knows how much money on this great time. And, you know, I know you can't, I don't regret it, and it was a great time. But at the same time, I'm listening to these, you know, grade school kids describe what it's like to be picked up to go to school on this bus line that was created for Hotel Row just for them, because there's so many homeless kids, and listening them talk about what it's like to sit in the lunchroom and kind of subtly try to watch for kids who aren't going to eat something, and then figure out a way to casually go up to them and say, hey, can I have this? I mean, can you imagine? And so we live in this tension between, you know, the amazing flash mob and then the non-flash mob. And to me, that's what makes Advent really hard, because we're in this season where we're hoping for and we're waiting for a king. And I think we tend to think, we tend to expect certain things from a king, right? And so back in the day, there was a person, John the Baptist, whose whole purpose in life, from before he was even born, his whole purpose in life was to be the one to go before Jesus, to prepare the way, to announce the coming of this king, and to, in a sense, like roll out the red carpet for Jesus so that his entry would be smooth and so that he'd be well, you know, well received into the world. And the Gospel of Luke talks about John the Baptist by using words from the prophet Isaiah. And he says these words that I know you guys have all heard many times, and it's this. He says, "A voice of one calling in the desert, prepare the way for the Lord, make straight paths for him. Every valley shall be filled in, every mountain and hill made low. The crooked road shall become straight, the rough way smooth, and all humankind will see God's salvation." I mean, the purpose of John's life was to announce the coming of this king who would change everything. And then he came in a barn, and then he left on a cross. And when you look around this world today, in a lot of ways, you wonder if he changed anything, right? Because he didn't come in the way that made visible changes. He came to do something much harder, which is to change a person's heart, to change a person on the inside, right? To bring, to give person, to not just give a person a facelift, but to give them a new life. And so as it turns out, even the amazing signs and wonders that Jesus did while he was here in the flesh weren't even really the point. They just gave him the street cred that he needed to do that much harder thing, which is to change a person's heart, to change them on the inside. So there's this great story in one of the Gospels, actually I think a couple of them, about a crippled man who couldn't walk, and his friends put him on a mat and lowered him through a roof, a crowded room. Jesus was there. It was too crowded to bring the man in the door, so they cut a hole in the roof. They lowered him in on the mat. And Jesus looked at the crowd that was gathered there, and he said to him, he said, "So is it harder to make this man walk or to forgive him, to change his heart?" You know, and duh, who's going to make a guy walk, you know? And then he looks at the guy and he says, "You're forgiven." But so that you can trust that, so that you can actually believe that in your heart, I'm also going to make you walk. I'm also going to make you walk. And see, so the outward thing just paved the way for the much greater healing of the heart. I don't know. It'd be really great if our ability to trust God didn't depend on that visible thing, right? If our ability to trust that God had come into the world and is alive and living and working in this world today, if it didn't depend on the outward signs and like a steady stream of flash mobs, right? And, you know, I think on our better days, at least on mine, I think yours too, on our better days, we're able to be those blessed ones who Jesus talks about, you know, the ones who have not seen and yet still believe. But I think more often than not, God gets this about us. God gets that we're sort of flash mob people, that we need to see something in our lives. And God gets it and honors it. And so Jesus takes these really ordinary things in our lives, these things that we smash into every time we turn around. He takes these ordinary things, and he very specifically and intentionally connects them to himself. So he says, you know, water. Hello, can you get more ordinary? Water, when you are baptized in this, you can know that I'm actually present, right? And then he says, when you eat this bread, which we're going to do later, and drink this wine, in spite of whatever else is going on around you in your life, let this be assuring to you that I am here, that I am present. And then he teaches something really radical, which we've talked about before, but it really hits me every time. He says that when you serve and honor the people around you, you're serving and honoring me. Which means, of course, that your spouse or your partner or your friend is actually mediating Christ to you. Or your really annoying coworker in the cube next door who makes a lot of strange noises all day could be mediating God to you, right? And you're mediating God to them. It's just mind-blowing if you really let it sink in. So now I'm going to ask you to do something that is so corny that only Greg would normally make you do. But I want you to do something. I want you to turn to the people around you and say, "Hello, Jesus." Turn to each person on either side of you and just say, "Hello, Jesus." "Hello, Jesus." "Hello, Jesus." So you guys, you're surrounded by ordinary people and ordinary things that the walking and talking Jesus promised he'd be present in and through. And so to me, this is really a lot of what Advent is all about. And this is actually a fill-in. Advent is the exercise of looking this ordinary, weary, worn-out world in the face. Not that you guys look worn out. And saying, hello, Jesus. Okay? So right now we're going to pause and we're going to take a time to say hello, Jesus, in another way that the church has traditionally, through the ages, done this. And the people who are going to help light the candles, now's your time. Come on forward. And you can be lighting them while I talk about it. But we're going to participate in this thing that we do where we light Advent candles. And we take this tangible light, and it's like we hold it up against whatever darkness is in our lives, and we say, look, this will never be overcome, right? That no matter what's going on, this light will never be overcome. And last week we lit the first candle. It was the candle of hope. This week we are lighting the second Advent candle, thank you, Peter, which is the candle of peace. And I really think in many ways, hope, having real hope, is what leads to this strange peace that can't be explained. It's a peace that comes regardless of your circumstances. And so today we're going to take just some time. We're going to just build some time and space here. And what I invite you to do is think of somebody in your world, somebody you might smack into every day. And I want you to think about doing for that person what Jesus or what the friends did for the guy on the mat. And that is to just hold up that person in your life and put them before Jesus and pray that they might receive this extremely intangible thing called hope and called peace. And so we're going to take some time right now. If you want to, say the name of the person out loud. If you don't, that's okay. Say it in your heart. But we're just going to take a few minutes right now and bring these people before Jesus. So God, let your visible light stand out against whatever darkness is in the lives of the people that have been named here today in a really powerful way. We pray that you are present with them, that you find your way into their lives. Maybe it's through one of us. Be with a non-flash mob world and break in your flash mob way. In your name we pray, amen. So Jesus has connected the dots for us, basically, between the visible and the invisible, between the ordinary things of the world and himself. And see if you notice the pattern here, okay? So instead of arriving in this flashy pants way, Jesus arrives in a feeding trough. Instead of hanging out with the upper crust, Jesus seems completely unable to differentiate between the upper and lower crust. Okay? Instead of going out in a dignified way that you would think of with a king, he goes out nailed between a thief and a murderer. And instead of carefully implementing a plan to a stringent plan to establish his successors, maybe you know where this is going. He's chosen you and me. There's the pattern there. Just imagine that. You are actually called on by God to mediate Christ to the people around you, to the people in your world. And you're doing that in a lot of ways, even when you don't realize it. There's a great passage we read earlier from, you know, Prepare the Way of the Lord. That passage just a little further down in the Gospel of Luke. There's a great description of John the Baptist out on the desert doing his major prophet thing. He's hemming and hawing, and he's calling, you know, he's in rare form. He's calling him a brood of vipers, and it's the kind of church that I'm not sure you're thirsty for, and I can't imagine what it was like, but he's like, you're a brood of vipers, and he's telling him that you're going to be burned up like the chaff that's left over when the good wheat gets taken up off the floor. And he's going on, and it says he's exhorting them. And he preached the good news to them. And somewhere along the way, apparently they must have, something he said must have been effective. Because they said, it appeared that they actually had a change of heart. And they said to him, okay, what now can we do? And the word do in this passage in the Greek is the same as the word that's used just a little bit earlier when Luke is talking about a good tree, like a tree that's good on the inside, automatically bears good fruit. And so it's like the people are, the word is to bear, and the people, it's like the people are saying, well, now that we've been changed on the inside, what can we bear? What kind of fruit can we bear in our lives? What can we do in our lives to better channel Christ to those around us? And I don't know, I'm reading along and I'm expecting a pretty outrageous list of things from John, you know, kind of a CNN hero kind of list, like, well, sell your house and go live with the poor, or give up your job downtown, you know, and go work with youth in transition, you know, I don't know, any number of things. So that's what I'm expecting. Here's what he says. I'm going to just read it to you, and it'll be up on the screen. The words from John the Baptist. Anyone who has two shirts or tunics should share with the one who has none. Anyone who has food should do the same. Even tax collectors came to be baptized. Teacher, they said, what should we do? Don't collect any more than you're required to, he told them. Well, then some soldiers asked him, what should we do? He replied, don't extort money and don't accuse people falsely. Be content with your pay. Okay. You'll notice that he didn't really call people, you know, out of their lives and out of their work. Instead, he called people into their lives and asked them to be fair and generous and content in the lives that have already been given to them. And I don't know, I think it's a lot of times, at least for me, it's easier to see God and serve God maybe in a place like Haiti than it is in my own life, you know, in the people that are smacking into me every which way I turn. And I think it's a real challenge, and that's where God promises to show up. And today we're going to have somebody, I don't know where you are, Brittany. Brittany Libby, here she comes. She's usually here singing in the band, so you'll maybe recognize it. But this is Brittany, and Brittany has spent a lot of time, here's a stool, kind of exploring this tension between going far and doing serving God in different places, you can have a seat, and doing it at home. And it's a challenge either way to really see the ordinariness of life as something extraordinary. So take it away, Brittany. Tell us a little bit of your story.
Okay. So when Don first asked me to talk on this subject, I was like, well, I don't know, where do you begin with that? But as she started kind of telling me what she was going to talk about, I thought about, right as I was about to graduate from college at Gustavus, I decided I wanted to go and live in another country and volunteer for a year. So I decided to go down to Honduras and work in an orphanage for a year. And when I started telling my friends and family, first thing, they were really excited for me. But then a lot of people started telling me, wow, how wonderful for you. You're going to go and change the world. And you're going to go change lives. And I kind of reacted like, don't give me so much credit. Like, that's kind of big shoes to fill, right? But part of me, I guess, probably thought, okay, yeah.
I'll do that.
That'd be cool. Here, I think I'm going to take this off. It always hits my earrings and then makes noise. Anyway, so I was like, okay, well, that's kind of intense, but I'll go down there and I'll do these things. And so I knew it was going to be hard, but I thought the hardest part would be more missing family and being so far away. So I get down there, and my job was going to be a caregiver for 20 girls from the ages of 14 to 21, and I had just turned 22. You can imagine a bunch of Honduran girls who've gone through a lot of trauma in their lives, who've had a lot of abandonment issues that they're orphans in this orphanage, having some 22-year-old American come in and tell them what to do, kind of a recipe for disaster. So I told them to get up at 4:30 in the morning. I told them to do their chores, to go to school. I told them to do their homework after school, to do chores again, to clean up again, and then go to bed at like 8:30. They didn't respond very well. So I went in thinking, of course they're going to love me, right? Why wouldn't they? And I went through what I called boot camp for about 4 months, and I cried most days. They didn't take me seriously. They disrespected me. They called me names. I had about 4 allies of the 20, but most of them, I mean, after everything that they had been through, they kind of just needed to give me that to make sure I was going to stick around and to see how hard I could be. And I was just kind of a, I don't know what to call it. Like, I basically just melted right in front of them. I just could not stand on my 2 feet and actually tell them what to do. So, of course, they saw that and they manipulated that. So it was a really difficult time. And I kind of started reflecting, like, okay, these people have told me that I'm going to go and change the world. It doesn't really look like I'm changing the world right now. In fact, it looked like I wasn't really making any sort of a difference. And so I got through the end of these 4 months, and one of the girls that was my ally, she said to me, we were working in the gardens, and we were down on our knees and working in the dirt with our hands, and I started crying again, which happened, like I said, on a regular basis. And she just said to me, Brittany, I have never known anyone that cries as much as you do.
Nice.
It's kind of a humbling experience. I was like, well, maybe I'm not in the right place right now. How am I down here and crying all the time when really I just need to be loving them? So I did some reflecting and decided to switch jobs and found a better fit. I ended up working in the school. I was a tutor for the 5th graders in Spanish and math, so I'd pull them into my classroom in groups of 2 or 3, sometimes 1-on-1, and that was an amazing fit. All of a sudden, I was getting down and learning with them, and I had a really wonderful experience, and that was where I stayed for the rest of my year there. But that wasn't, I would say, the most important part of my experience down in Honduras. In addition to our daily job, we also had what we call an hogar, which means home. And you would go with your hogar, and you'd have, so the kids are all divided into different homes based on their ages. So I picked the youngest girls, which were, they were about 8 to 12. There was also a baby's home, but this was like the first girl's home. And every night I'd arrive right before dinner. We'd serve dinner to them, eat dinner with them, and then we'd go back to the home, and they'd have about an hour to get ready just to wind down before bed. So we'd read lots of stories. Now you can imagine I'm on the cement floor, and there are like 10 girls hopping all over me, pulling at my hair, just trying to get a part of this book, right? And then we'd sing Disney songs before we went to bed. They didn't speak English, so they did their best to make the sounds of the English words, but we'd sing the Disney songs together. And then they'd go into their beds, we'd say a prayer, I would kiss them all goodnight, and I'd go on my way. And near the end of the year, I started to look at it, and I said, the most important part is not my job there. It's just to love them, to sit down with them, read a book, sing a song, and kiss them goodnight. And I think that is where I made the difference. And if I go back to Honduras now and they don't remember my name, now they're probably, you know, between 10 and 15 years old. If they don't remember my name, I think that's okay. I think the difference that I made wasn't necessarily me. It's just a string of volunteers that go down and love them. So then I got back from Honduras and I said, well, great. How am I going to live up to that in my daily life? So I started working in a school. It's actually just down the street. It's called Cristo Rey Jesuit High School. And it's a Catholic preparatory, college preparatory high school, but it serves the under-resourced population in the area. And so I do administrative work, and I love my job. But I think that same as the kids in Honduras, the most important part of my job is not my daily tasks. It's just being there as a constant support to them and loving them, giving that love and stability that they crave so much in their lives. So I think, kind of like what Don was saying before, God isn't calling us out of our lives to do something big and extravagant. You know, kind of like what Mother Teresa said, do no great things, but small things with great love. And I really believe that's what we're called to do. In our everyday lives, whatever you do in your life, whatever you are in your life, don't focus so much on the tasks. I mean, you have to do those, of course, but try to give love to the people around you, because that is what will make a difference.
Well said. Thank you. What a great story. Yeah, thank you, Brittany. Thank you very much. Oh, we'll just have Brittany preach. That was fantastic. She'll be around if you want to talk to her more. She's fascinating to talk with. So in a little bit after worship, these tables that are now covered with bread and wine and communion elements, you're going to see Christmas cookies appear there, and you'll be able to enjoy them after worship. But I love Christmas cookies, not just because they're awesome and taste good, but they really mediate Christ to me in a strange way, and maybe you'll resonate with this. But I grew up in a house where my mom baked, of course, cut out sugar cookies every year, right? And every year she'd make about 12 dozen. And I don't think she found a cookie cutter that she didn't like. I mean, we had every single, you know, shape, Christmas shape, known to man, in our house. So, you know, she would just go to town, bake 12 dozen cookies, and then it's just gotten to be a joke, because every year, I have just one twin sister, so it's just me and my sister. Every year, we'd assure her that we would help sit down and frost all these cookies, right? You know where this is going. So, every year was the same. We'd sit down, and my sister and I would each select carefully one cookie, and we would spend like literally an hour and a half on one cookie. I still remember the year of Marge from Simpsons, the year I took Mrs. Claus and turned her into Marge Simpson, and I'm not kidding, I spent like an hour just getting the exact right mix of frosting to get the purple hue to Marge's hair, you know. So every year was the same. We would each end up doing about one cookie, absolutely intricately, gorgeous, awesome cookie, and then we'd go outside and be done. And we'd leave Mom to do the remaining 142 cookies, you know. And, I mean, it's just every year, and it's just a joke among us, but she never got mad about it. She always, I think, was secretly amused. You know, she'd feign madness, but it's just, for me, it's been a way that these Christmas cookies mediate Christ to me through my mom. I mean, it's just so powerful for me. So afterwards, you'll get to enjoy some Christmas cookies, and you can reflect on maybe how somebody in your life is mediating Christ to you, or did, or will, or how you will in someone else's life. For now, we are going to celebrate this meal together with this ordinary bread and ordinary wine. And we're going to celebrate together the way Christ flash mobs the meal and shows up through these ordinary things in a powerful way. And so I don't know where each one of you is at with what you think about Jesus, or where you're at with any of your faith, or maybe you think nothing about it. Either way, I really invite you to just come and share in the meal and just take a step forward and just trust maybe that God is going to show up somehow, even in such a simple thing as this. So everybody is welcome to this meal. Just come up. There's this one has an allergy-free option, gluten-free, what else free? Lots of freedom here in this. So that's an option there. But there's tables all around, four different tables. Just gather around the table that's near to you, pull off a hunk of bread, pour yourself a glass of wine or grape juice. The grape juice is the white. And just enjoy this time together for a little bit. And then we'll come back with some more music and worship. Thanks.